He rose and looked long at Gandalf. The others gazed at them in silence as they stood there facing one another. The gray figure of the man, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, was tall and stern as stone, his hand upon the hilt of his sword. He looked as if some king out of the mists of the sea had stepped upon the shores of lesser men. Before him stooped the old figure, white, shining now as if with some light kindled within, bent, laden with years, but holding a power beyond the strength of kings. Woo! Welcome to a sacred fellowship where we are reading the works of J.R.R. Tolkien using sacred practices. We are using these texts to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions. We believe that through treating classics like Lord of the Rings as sacred, we will learn to treat one another as sacred. And those are some sacred words. Wow.
Oh, yes.
Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Lorianne. Now, this is auspiciously episode 50, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, will be discussing the fifth chapter in The Treason of Isengard, The White Rider, through the theme of trust. Take a seat on a rock or on Treebeard's Hill or in your car and join us. Reading in a community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred, and we're glad you're here to continue building community with us.
And I forgive my editing mistake. It's the theme of treasure. Oops, I missed one. So thank you for your trust, but it is going to be treasure.
Thank goodness I looked at the theme, so I wasn't telling a story about the wrong theme.
So that should be my dungeon that I'm so used to editing these things, and yet I still miss things. But and I even told you my dungeon before. I can't even remember what it is now. Oh, my dungeon is basically this chapter where I almost felt like there was a veil over my eyes. I know I have read it multiple times, and I'm still unwrapping more from this chapter. Mm-hmm. And so I almost feel unprepared today. I'm not phoning it in. I really promise. I have spent hours on this chapter. But I'm... it'll be great to talk about it with you, because it feels like there's mysteries here that are not revealing themselves to me. So I can't wait. And I know that I have the rest of my life to read it again. So today is where we are for The White Rider. And I have the rest of my life to read The White Rider more and get more from it. And my tower, as I was telling you before we started, is in this post-vaccine era. I had friends over. It was stimulating. It was fantastic conversation. It was great and creative to prepare food for people. I needed that. Mm-hmm. So how are you, Catherine? Do you have a dungeon or a tower?
Well, I did also mention this to you before, but it was yesterday. So people who have listened to this for the nearly year that we've been doing it know that I love to tell stories about being a missionary. And in every missionary's life, at least in my sect, you have a president of your missionary area, but you also have his wife, who's almost like your mother for those 18 to 24 months. And I had two of those when I was on my first mission in California. And the second one was named Peggy Lee. She was so devoted to the mission in the first place that she learned Spanish before coming to California and was able to connect with more people. And she was a really great lady, who unfortunately passed away on Saturday. On the other hand, my tower is that I got a art print in the mail that it is of a mountain and a quote from the Silmarillion that says, "I shall prove but mine instrument." And we have had many thoughts on this theme, but the thing that makes me laugh a lot this weekend is that I have put it on my musical instrument after the encouragement and many laughs of other people in the Tolkien community.
Meta indeed.
Yes.
If I could put it on my violin, I would. I love it. That was very funny. Very good. Very good. And speaking of treasures like your piano and this art print, I still haven't found a place for mine, but mm-hmm. I will indeed. Will you tell us a story about treasure, our theme?
Yes. Well, speaking of violins, This is actually about a relationship I have with a not an impromptu but informal violin teacher of mine. Her name is Marianne Foley, and she and I were in the same congregation when I was growing up in Massachusetts, and she was one of my strongest like encouragers of improving myself. For example, when I told her that I was thinking of applying to this one high school where they taught Greek and Latin as mandatory courses, she kind of talked me into applying there, which is where I eventually went on the idea that if I did so, she would lend me her Greek Bible when I got around to studying it long enough. But she was also a professional violinist. And when I was preparing for my senior recital, I had 3 hours a day for about 2 weeks where she gave me private lessons to prepare me for the violin elements of my recital. And I still have this copy of Jules Massenet's Meditation from Thais, which is her handwriting all over it with reminders of places where I should lift my spirits and be sure to kind of get in touch with the lighter parts of this piece by smiling, where it'll give me suggestions on dynamics or bowing techniques. And I have that music memorized. I have my version honed to an art form by this point, you know, 22 years later. But I still remember the patience which she gave me all this instruction with. So that's one of my treasured objects.
Beautiful. And we would love to see some of yours. So if you'd like to share them on our Facebook page, you can do that. That's called A Sacred Fellowship. Or you can contact us through email or our website, and we'll give you more of that information later. And we'd also love to see your comments on Second Breakfast. Catherine is the most recent contributor to Second Breakfast. I'm due, but I have to teach a class on a totally different topic tomorrow. And I have had to not be 100% devoted to Tolkien for a minute. So once that's over, I'll probably write something. So,
well, I have another idea of where they can contribute ideas or examples of their treasures. I have been noticing that I have neglected our Instagram account. So that is also A Sacred Fellowship. So if you would like to tag us there and give us a picture of your treasures, we would love to see those as well.
Oh, what a great idea. That's a great thing. A great place for pictures. So I should post my the cookbook that I put on the Facebook page. All right. Well, the Gammers really only wanted to talk to us this week about the word treasure, because it actually shares the same root as thesaurus. And I thought that was so cool. Because treasure comes from older Latin words that mean a treasury or a hoard, something laid up, a repository or a collection. And of course, a thesaurus is that kind of collection of words. And words are indeed treasures. So the Gammers wanted, because that's basically who they are. Their library is a treasure of words and a thesaurus, a three-dimensional thesaurus is their library. So when I get to be with them and learn from them, I'm inside of a thesaurus and inside of this treasure of words. And they take such good care of words. So that was the only word that they wanted to talk about this week, because they know that there are many instances of that in the chapter. And I organized mine by object, person and other. And I don't know if that fits with how you did yours. Is that fair?
Well, I remember you giving me that instruction when I was starting to read the chapter. So I have all of my things picked out, but if you would like to kind of guide this discussion, I can certainly find a few instances of each one.
Okay. Well, I would like to do that then. And then if we miss any, we can go back and find them. So I am wondering what objects you might have found in the chapter and as treasures. And for me, the very first thing that I found, and again, so we're not going through the chapter page by page, but object by object. So the first object that really jumped out for me is when Aragorn notices the large pale leaf of golden hue and some
that was my crumbs. First as well, the yes. Melorn leaf from the Lothlorien.
Right. And I even thought the way he says news is a treasure itself in a way, but that might be an other instead of an object. But how wonderful that he finds this leaf and these crumbs and how much he gets out of that. Mm-hmm. And then they find the knife that cut the bindings on the hobbits. And they still don't know if there's two, but they get the story. And it starts by discovering this leaf and these crumbs.
Mm-hmm. I particularly enjoyed the crumbs in this. It is as being pleased with his skill, this referring to the intrepid hobbit who has made his way out of captivity. He says, being pleased with his skill, he then sat down and quietly ate some whey bread. That at least is enough to show that he was a hobbit without the Melorn leaf.
Right.
And it really turns his, it just reminds us that he identifies the way that a hobbit's both a treasure food and treasure a life where they are able to be at rest for a moment. And so that's kind of a lovely moment in considering that aspect of the fraught times in which they were acting.
Right. And that whole speech by Legolas is almost funny. I mean, it's almost like he can't believe this. A bound prisoner has escaped from orcs and horsemen, stops while still in the open, cuts his bonds somehow with an orc knife. But how and why? For if his legs were tied, how did he walk? And if his arms were tied, how did he use the knife? But if neither were tied, why did he cut the cords at all? Being pleased with his skill, he has a snack. Then at least is enough to show he was a hobbit. I love that. After that, I suppose he turned his arms into wings and flew away, singing into the trees. I just love that.
I almost hear this as a slightly Sherlock Holmes assessment of the scene.
Right.
Because I doubted many people would be thinking, you know, this progression of events and how much it just demonstrates about the psychology and the priorities of life.
Right, right. And then I see the next object that I found, I think, is Gimli's axe. And it's his treasure, but he also sees the trees as treasure. They're a little afraid to go into the forest. And so the next object there, this axe, and Gimli even says out loud, I'm not going to use it on these trees, I think.
Yes.
I will keep my axe loose in my belt, not for use on trees. So Gimli is starting to treasure trees, and also his axe is his treasure, which he's carried with him, and it's hardly ever away from him. And we know in the next chapter he has to part with it. So I see the two treasures there are not inconsistent for Gimli, that he can treasure trees and his axe and doesn't have to use the axe on trees.
Well, I find it interesting that skipping ahead for me 20 pages, we have these exhortations of a sort from Galadriel.
Yeah.
And it says to Gimli, son of Glowin, she said, give his ladies greeting. Lockbearer, wherever thou goest, my thought goes with thee, that have a care to lay thine axe to the right tree. In happy hour you have returned to us, Gandalf, cried the dwarf, capering as he sang loudly in the strange dwarf tongue. Come, come, he shouted, swinging his axe. Since Gandalf's head is now sacred, let us find one that is right to cleave. And so I love that his idea of knowing how to use his axe, which is so dear to him, is strengthened by the memory of the person who has really taught him so much respect for the trees in the first place, even before his friendship with Legolas has been really rooted, to be a little bit punny there.
right, rooted. And there are so many different ways in which the ring is an object of treasure. There are our enemies, as Legolas is and Aragorn and Gimli are talking about, and as they're starting to figure out the riddle, in a way, of what may have happened, and figuring out that they were instructed to find hobbits, they're guessing this, and take them away. And so they are treasuring the ring so they're not to damage these halflings. So I thought that was interesting. And of course, the ring is a precious object, a treasure to Sauron. it's such that he would assume that anybody else would want to use it. It has not occurred to Sauron that someone would want to destroy it. And so this is an interesting way to look at treasure. So did you have any other thoughts on the ring as an object of treasure that I'm missing?
Those were really kind of been parallel with mine as well. Sorry, I'm trying to think of the moments in which it's a, the specific object that it is. It's more I think that it, for me, more in this chapter, well, the ring is certainly considered to be a treasured thing or to be a thing of great price. It is more the people who are in possession of it or the people who have some kind of quote unquote mastery over it. And so a little bit where my perspective differs from you.
Well, that's a great segue because we can go on then to people who are treasures. Mm-hmm. And so the ring bearer is a treasure in so many different ways. Right? The fellowship wants to protect the ring bearer, and the people hunting the ring bearer see him as a treasure in a very different way, don't they?
Mm-hmm. This actually kind of might be going slightly far afield of the theme possibly, but it reminds me of a Christian parable from the New Testament in which they're talking about, it comes very soon after the example of the person who has 100 sheep and leaves the 99 to find one. That is a different kind of treasure, but there is the parable of the person who has lost a coin, and when they have found it in their household, they call all together to rejoice in the fact that what has lost has been found. And for me, that specific parallel has to do with the sharing of knowledge that we have between the three hunters, and hopefully no one was surprised when we let loose the information that Gandalf is the White Rider in this chapter.
Yes, right.
But there is so much comfort, to use Gimli's word, in the information that they're able to pass back and forth. So I definitely think that all members of the fellowship have been treasured by these people in this chapter.
Right.
Even in their reflections on what happened to Boromir and the goodness of his eventual end.
Right. I thought it's so interesting how Gandalf says at least he escaped.
Yes.
And yes, I mean, I understand what he means. He repented, he redeemed himself. And so escaped being controlled by the ring and controlled by the desire for it. And I see also as a treasure in a way, elf eyes. I'm just really amazed by how well Legolas can see. Mm-hmm. And he's the one who first sees something in the wood and no one else can see. And I even love them. Gimli saying, look at what, where, I have not elf eyes. So I see that they treasure his ability to see and to see so well. So not only does he see far, but he's also able to see discerningly through trees and to see something that is clearly not a tree. And even at first they say it looked like it was not far away. I mean, they just don't even know what it is they are seeing yet. But I do love how they treasure an old man enough to say that you can't just shoot an arrow at an old man. Aragorn says that. And so I see there.
I don't know if that's a social convention or just a word of wisdom that you should not shoot an old man.
Right, right. But I think I thought that was really touching. I mean, earlier in the earlier chapter where they see an old man, Aragorn says, who are you, father? Sit with us. Mm-hmm. Sit with our fire, be warmed or whatever. But now he says quietly, we may not shoot an old man so at unawares and unchallenged. Mm-hmm. Never fear a doubt be on us. And so I think there is something in Aragorn that values elderliness or something, or at least let's see what this person is about at first.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course it does give it away, but the three hunters really value Gandalf. He's a treasure. I love Legolas calling Mithrandir, Mithrandir.
Yes.
And Aragorn calling Gandalf. Gimli can't even say anything. He just falls to his knees.
Oh, it's so marvelous to have him back.
It is. I have to admit, I had to go to YouTube and just look at this scene.
Yeah.
How it compared. I think it is so interesting. And here's maybe another treasure. So I was pondering this and wanted to talk to you a little bit about this, but fire, because we know in a way this is Gandalf's gift. And this is his ring and his power. And he's even known for fireworks. So it is related to him, but Aragorn can't even hold his sword. He has to drop his sword. Legolas ends up shooting an arrow into the air, which bursts into flames. Mm-hmm. So I think it is interesting how the treasure of fire helped. Does it help them know that that's who this is?
For me, let's see, it's a couple of pages later than where I just was reading. So Legolas gave a great shout and shot an arrow high into the air. It vanished in a flash of flame. Mm-hmm. Mithrandir, he cried. Mithrandir, well met, I say to you, Legolas, said the old man. So for me, that was a moment of Legolas's discernment, and this may be overreaching, but this is my headcanon for what it is. He has a suspicion of who it is, and so he fires this arrow as almost a test, and when it is responded to that way, he knows who he has tested.
Ooh. Now, see, my headcanon is that Gandalf is actually able to divert the arrow and make the sword unusable for the moment.
Well, he says that he shot an arrow high into the air. The old man is not high in the air. So that's where I'm getting that from.
And I'm getting it that Gandalf is actually able to redirect it.
Oh, that's a good point. So we're just going to leave it ambiguous because we both have good points.
We both do. I do not need to have you be wrong, and I do not need to be proven wrong. I love both of these, and I'm not sure. And that's why I was looking at some other sources, and nothing is discussed so far in that I can find. I do know that he returns with a greater power and with a greater, he's now the white, and he even says, mm-hmm. I'm Saruman, as Saruman should have been. So he is appreciating the treasure of Saruman's potential. And so I see that he has some greater gifts perhaps, and that's where I am getting that. Mm. But I love both of those. I think side by side, they're both really great. And I think they just speak to the treasure that the three hunters perceive when they recognize who it is. It is really exciting.
So not to get ahead of Hubbard, but I have a discussion question possibly.
We have a lot of questions in this chapter, so don't worry.
For anyone who doesn't know me well, I love writing papers and I love discussing things on an academic or deep dive level. And one of the things I've discussed in the past was the idea of heroes who are more successful at their quest in the absence of a mentor. Mm-hmm. And one of the examples I gave was actually of Aragorn and Gandalf, how Aragorn is served better by Gandalf not being there when he needs to take command and when he needs to set his feet on his specific path towards Gondor. And so I see Gandalf as someone that Aragorn certainly treasures, but would you say that Gandalf has returned for Aragorn in any way, or would you say that he is more returned for the purpose of the salvation of the rest of Middle-earth rather than aiding the king to return to the throne of Gondor?
My first guess is an and it's mainly because of what I chose to read as the opening. This face-off, he rose and looked long at Gandalf. The others gazed at them in silence as they stood there facing one another. There is so much there I don't understand. I don't quite know what's happening. But because he looked as if some king out of the mists of the sea had stepped upon the shores of lesser men, that tells me that I think part of the answer is yes to the first part. And I don't know if that's doubt or hesitation or whatever on the part of Aragorn or not. I don't know why Aragorn might need this return, but something about the return of Gandalf is increasing this king inside of Strider. And I just thought that was so stunning. I mean, he doesn't look as if he is some king who is, you know, so that's a great question. What do you think? What is
your... Well, one of the things that I thought, and I really don't see this as an answer, but it possibly just a different way to consider it, is Gandalf refers a couple of times to the turning of the tide, to the way in which his presence is going to affect a direction that has been going in the past, and now it is able to return a different way. I don't think that has any of his return, while it gives Aragorn more ally and more wisdom and more guidance, it does not turn him to a different path. It does not turn his tide at all. And so that is the only way in which I would say that Gandalf really doesn't have much to do with Aragorn's personal journey from this point on. Aragorn would have wound up in this path regardless of Gandalf's return, but I have great respect for Gandalf's return nonetheless, for what it means for the rest.
Right, right. I also think it is very interesting because just before that, he says, "Come, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, do not regret your choice in the valley, nor call it a vain pursuit." We know that Aragorn questioned everything he was doing and said, I have terrible choices, all of those things. We see his agony. Now, we know that they spoke about, they caught him up. They caught Gandalf up on some things. Does that mean Aragorn told Gandalf all of that agony? I don't think so. I am wondering if Gandalf somehow sees that in him and just knows. And it's because he's kind of absolved him here, that might be the step he needed to step more into the kingship.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And it is only in saying it out loud that I'm hearing it. I didn't know that when you first asked the question, but I was really puzzled. And that's part of why I feel like I'm almost so unprepared for this chapter, because I have so many questions here and the chapter becomes a treasure just for that. Mm-hmm. Aragorn needed to hear that, because in some ways this has been a wasted trip. I forget even who says it. I think it's Gimli. Oh, we could have saved a bunch by getting out of the river 3 days earlier and walking to the forest. But that wasn't their plan. And so I think it's almost that shall prove but my instrument piece there, that Gandalf is telling them that what seems like wasted time, what seems like a fruitless search, you don't have Merry and Pippin, we don't have the ring bearer to protect anymore, yet this is all turning the tide towards the good. So I'm wondering if this is just one of those shall prove but mine instrument moments.
Well, I love that you brought up whether or not Gandalf was told of Aragorn's debt and Aragorn's personal strife. I'm also in another Harry Potter discussion group, and yesterday we were discussing the Sorting Hat and the conversations that people have with it. Mm-hmm. And someone asked, do you think that the Sorting Hat is a prophetic presence? Is it able to look into the future and see things? And my response to that was that the Sorting Hat is listening to as much to what is said as to what is left unsaid. Mm. And I think that has to do a lot with Gandalf and his perception of Aragorn's guilt, that he feels, or possibly even shame, that he's a bad person for having made these choices rather than guilt over what he has chosen to do. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, this chapter is full of questions.
It is. And I had originally asked how it is that Gandalf knew to appear there. And then it actually is in there that the eagle knew and brought him there. So here's one time where the answer is the eagle. and that is fair. I don't quite know. How does Gandalf know that Merry and Pippin are with the Ents? How does he know that without having run into them? Has he just seen that from the air?
I assumed that it had to do with word of mouth. I'm not sure by whom.
yeah. So I don't quite know how he knows everything he knows. I understand why Gandalf would choose to be there and how he would understand he would meet the three hunters. Mm-hmm. I'm curious as to why he chose that as opposed to saying, let me down with Merry and Pippin, or let me down with Fram and Frodo, dear. Sam and Frodo, you know, it's, whatever. okay.
But for the first time in like 20 episodes, I'm going to say, and that's why we need an editor, because we don't need that editor.
Yes. We're not going to cut that out because we don't know how, or we don't have the skills or the time. Anyway, so if you're interested, let us know. But I do see that Merry and Pippin are treasures to Gandalf and to the eagle because they are able to see them somehow and see mm-hmm. that that's the place to head and the place to go. Were there other people who you thought were treasures in this chapter?
I'm directly looking. I did not mean to flip to this page, but it just so happened that as you were asking that I was on. Then you know about Frodo, said Gimli. How do things go with him? I cannot say. He was saved from a great peril, but many before him lie before him still. He resolved to go alone to Mordor, and he set out. That is all that I can say. Not alone, said Legolas. We think that Sam went with him. Did he? Said Gandalf, and there was a gleam in his eye and a smile on his face. Mm-hmm. Did he indeed? It is news to me, yet it does not surprise me. Good, very good, you lighten my heart. So I feel like Gandalf is very much treasuring the person that he saw as a worthy companion for Frodo back in Bag End, but did not realize until now how much it would be needed for him to be just as stalwart a companion as he seemed at that point.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. What a journey he is on as well. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you, because I missed that, how Sam is a treasure and Gandalf names that. He does mention aiding Frodo there when Frodo was on the seat of seeing. Mm-hmm. So, before I think he had even gone to, or this is after he's recovered and been with Galadriel, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, she's the treasure and they all get some word from her. And I'm interested to hear what you think of what she says to, or what she is sent to say, what she sends Gandalf to say to Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli.
Oh, there is the first, well, there are the first four lines of her message to Aragorn. Mm-hmm. Where now are the Dúnedain, Elessar, Elessar? Why do they kinsfolk fonder afar? Near is the hour when the lost shall come forth, and the great company should, and the great company ride from the north. And so I find this, it's a kind of both, and I used the word exhortation before, and I'm mm-hmm. loath to use it again. But when Gandalf is sent back from the, we don't know if it's dead or near dead, but he has returned for this greater purpose and he is sent to bring messages from Galadriel. Her idea is to bring Aragorn a sense of purpose, a sense of focusing what he is to do. And I find it very significant that he receives this message before he goes to the aid of Rohan and before he is able to continue on to Gondor. And this is something where I don't think he would have wandered errant, as some might say. Mm-hmm. But this is, if nothing else, words to strengthen him.
Exactly. Right. It's almost like she's speaking outside of time. Mm-hmm. It really is, both what she says to him and what she says to Legolas. And then just lovely. An interesting line there, but have a care to lay thine axe to the right tree, she says, mm-hmm. Emily. What do we find out what that tree is?
Not as far as I can tell.
Okay. Interesting. I hope to unpack that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And then other, not people. So I love the fact that the three hunters realized that the horses ran away, but were not frightened. Mm-hmm. So the horses have found a treasure. And of course, the horses are a treasure to the three hunters. It would really, really be nice not to have to walk all the way back. So the horses are a treasure. And to Legolas, of course, this old forest is a treasure. Mm. Though I am so curious again about the shortness of breath and the stuffiness that is described.
Right, it seems a little more ominous or portentous than it was in the previous instance of it being mentioned.
In this chapter, there's a mention of, do you feel the tenseness? And
yes.
That's interesting. And I understand the moot is going on, but nevertheless, they feel that stuffiness. They want to climb the hill to get fresh air. So there seems to be something about the oldness of the forest and its in that way of being a treasure that is stuffy in the air. It's just very interesting. And it's only later that Legolas says something, do you not feel the tenseness?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a separate discussion. It's just very curious.
Well, slightly before that, we have Legolas saying that, I do not think the wood is evil, whatever the tales may say. Mm-hmm. No, it is not evil, or what evil in it is far away. I catch only the faintest echoes of dark places where the hearts of the trees are black. There is no malice near us, but there is watchfulness and anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like there's stuffiness or the shortness of breath that he mentions. It takes my breath after he says that, do you not feel the tenseness? I think it is almost sympathetic tension with the wood. It is, if it would be slightly disrespectful for them to be at ease in such a place, because it would imply that the work is done that needs to be done within this woods, and they should not feel that in a place where there is such watchfulness and anger, there's something that needs to be resolved. And so he, out of respect for the forest, in a way kind of matches its tone emotionally.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
It makes sense. It makes sense. And then I'm just so curious because, and I know we're off the theme a little bit, but I just have another question. And again, we're just full of them today. When they get to the top of Treebeard's Hill, they don't know it's Treebeard's Hill, Aragorn stood up and looked about. He saw nothing that was of any use. And it says, there he could see the heads of the trees descending in ranks towards the plain. Is he actually already seeing them moving? Maybe he can't perceive they're moving?
I don't think it's that. I think it's more that, you know, it's a collection and in any sense of that it could be a rank or file of trees.
But it's an active verb, you know, descending. And it just it gives me that sense. If he stood and watched hard enough, would he actually notice them moving? So I just thought I'd ask that.
Well, I think that he would have heard a bit of rawr if he had been watching them descending rank and file towards Isengard.
Yes. My next piece of treasure, which I thought was very funny, is a piece of Gandalf's mind. And he's talking about things and saying, riddles? No, I was talking aloud to myself. A habit of old. They choose the wisest person present to speak to. And then he says, if you wish to have a piece of my mind as plain as possible. So I think he's seeing that his mind is a treasure and they'd better appreciate it, these three.
I love that. It brings to mind a line that I believe is only in the movie and the Hobbit and Unexpected Journey, where Gandalf is stalking off after the dwarves are quarreling about something.
Yeah.
And they say, where are you going? And he says, seek the counsel of the wisest person here, basically. And they say, who is that? And he goes, myself.
Exactly. And then the next thing I found, I actually thought it was kind of a treasure, the sense of danger and its potency in the wood, because Gandalf realizes that the Ents are about to do something. And so there's a treasure to that, because they're not going to waste their anger. They're not going to just spend it rashly. It's going to be treated as a treasure and used to do the best good. And he, you know, he knows that Saruman's in trouble.
Well, I love this section that I possibly think you're referring to. He's talking about the coming of the hobbits and the tidings that they brought have spilled it, referring to the wrath of Fangorn himself bringing over into the forest, filling with it. And he says, a thing is about to happen which has not happened since the Elder Days. The Ents are going to wake up and find that they are strong. And this is a very curious phrase for me, because when I think of a person waking up, I think of a person waking up and discovering, okay, they have strength, or discovering that they need to gather their resources. No, they are going to awake and discover that they are equal to the challenge that is before them.
And I do love the language of flooding, slow wrath brimming over the tidings that spilled it, soon be running like a flood. Its tide is turned against Saruman. And I think it even says at one point that a dam has broken. I forget where, but I think Gandalf says that somewhere. So I love the watery language there. that is marvelous.
Well, even in the following paragraph, they talk about how a gleam of sun through fleeting clouds fell on Gandalf's hands, which lay upturned on his lap. They seem to be filled with light as a cup is with water.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness. And fire being his element, a gleam of sun. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And any other, let's see. Oh, healing council. Where did I write that down? I threw down my enemy and he fell from the high place. And he went to Carascaladon, and he found healing and gave counsel and took counsel. So there are two treasures for me, healing and counsel. And then even the time that he took to rest, which was outside of time, of course, that ageless time. But I found that that was a deep treasure, and glad that he had that in his return.
Well, it reminds me further on from where we were just talking about the water imagery. He talks about it. Hope is not victory. War is upon us and all our friends, a war in which the only use of the ring could give us surety of victory. Fills me with great sorrow and great fear, for much shall be destroyed and all may be lost. I am Gandalf, Gandalf the White, but black is mightier still.
Mm-hmm.
No, he says in a soft voice, it has gone beyond our reach, which is an interesting way to not exactly address what he is talking about with it, but we know from the following lines of that, at least let us be glad. We can no longer be tempted to use the ring. We must go down to face a peril near the despair, yet that deadly peril is removed.
Right.
And so his hope is in the absence of evil of one kind, and that's a place to start. But the part where he says that black is mightier still is just disheartening in so many ways.
Right. But there, the treasure of the ring is in its absence.
Mm-hmm.
No one will be tempted. It won't be a distraction. It will be gone. And for me, the last treasure I found was Shadowfax.
I love Shadowfax.
I love Shadowfax. Yes. So Shadowfax comes, and then the other two horses come back. And I love how they seem to be swimming in a gray-green sea. More water language, but I have seen grass like that. And I love the gray-green. Oh, that's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Anything else for treasure that I missed?
I do not think that I have any other things marked.
there is the mention of the stair when he's talking about his fight with the Balrog. Gandalf mentions climbing the stairs. It had not been destroyed, but I think in the climax of the fight, the stairs do get destroyed. So to Gimli, they are a treasure, and he's excited to hear about them. Long has that been lost, this stair. Many have said that it was never made save in legend, but others say it was destroyed. It was made and it had not been destroyed, but now it sounds like it was. So
mm-hmm.
I
I had completely forgotten about the stairs carved into the living rock of Zeroxigal.
Right. And it sounds like he was stuck up there at that point because the ruined stair was choked with burned and broken snow. Mm-hmm. So he was unable to leave from the top. And it's just powerful.
Indeed.
So I think that is the end of the treasure for me, and we can move into our sacred practice, where I have more questions to the next about treasure the chapter. So going back a little bit, and this is actually when they are on the hill and before they have seen Gandalf, there are other marks, very strange marks. So they have climbed the hill. Let us go up and look about it, said Legolas. I still feel my breath short. I should like to taste a freer air for a while.
Hmm.
Companions climbed up. Aragorn came last, moving slowly. He was scanning the steps and ledges closely. I am almost sure that the hobbits have been up here, he said, but there are other marks, very strange marks, which I do not understand. So I am wondering if you have any idea what these marks would be. And so that is my question. Hmm. And I don't have an answer. So I'm supposed to give one. I'm supposed to be the first. And it reminds me a little bit of Weathertop. And I wonder if Gandalf may have tried to leave some runes. So what do you think?
Well, I'm looking at this way of phrasing, there are other marks, very strange marks, which I do not understand. It makes me wonder, as a counter question, who made those marks and for whose benefit?
Yeah.
And yes, I think that it's possible that if Gandalf had passed this way, he may have left marks in the hopes that they would be interpreted by them. But on the other hand, Gandalf, if we were to draw this comparison to Weathertop, would definitely have made them in a way that it people of his kind or his fellowship would be able to recognize. But I feel like the marks are made by those who have traveled into the forest and know both of the benefits and the perils of Fangorn. So they may be signs of warning, or they may be signs of caution. It does not necessarily have anything to do with peril, mm-hmm. but almost an exhortation. That's the third time I've used that phrase so far.
Right. So remember when they first call Gandalf, it says, my name, have you not guessed it already? But I think mm-hmm. at some point, doesn't it seem like he doesn't know his name? Well, Nett,
that's my impression as well.
That would be the study of many lives. Let me see. Let me know your name. As for what I wish to say, I said it. Well, maybe as for my name, he broke off, laughing long and softly. My name, have you not guessed it already? You've heard it before, I think. It's almost as if he hasn't remembered it yet, so he wouldn't know to make the same kind of rune as he made on Weathertop.
That makes a lot of sense.
In the dark here. So I'm just stirring up more questions, but then what other sign could it be? Could it
mm-hmm.
be something that Einor would recognize or something? Anyway, I don't know. So I'm going
like to Gandalf, you still speak in riddles.
Right. Yes. I'm going to stick with it in my head that Gandalf has made those marks because he seems to expect to meet them there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he was trying to communicate. So there, I'm just going to leave that as my guess. And I've got zero to back that up. But yes, there might have been other people or beings over time who have climbed that and left markings to say mm-hmm. something like watch out for the trees or something, because there is the story that it is at least dangerous or has mystery to it. Even Gimli says, well, it's not quite as bad as Mirkwood, but
I'm even curious if some of these markings are made by the elves, because I feel like they have the greatest kinship of anyone who would go into that forest with the trees and with the Ents.
Yes.
And so they would be the most likely to leave signs rather than hustle on their way to safer spaces.
Could be. It could very well be. Very interesting. So that was the only thing that jumped out at me where I could find no answer, but I love talking about it. And mm-hmm. you've brought up more possibilities. So great. Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. Do you have any more exhortations of your own?
Oh, sorry, my brain is going to the, I need to flip to the page. It has to do with the section from the messages from Galadriel.
Oh, okay. Oh, wonderful.
And the part where it says, but it take have a care to lay thine axe to the right tree.
Right.
And so my exhortation to the company as a whole, wherever they may be, is to be able to discern what battles are best fought in any situation, but especially in the days to come.
Yes, excellent. That will be very pertinent in the next. And I'm just always struggling with the dualism in the books itself. So I'm going to exhort Gandalf that no, black is not greater or more, or evil is not going to be greater. And have, if you, you know, fake it till you make it, Gandalf. No, sorry. I'm going to disagree with you there. So that is mine. And so next week we'll discuss chapter 6 of The Treason of Isengard, The King of the Golden Hall. I cannot wait.
Oh, this is my favorite chapter of the entire book.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And our theme will be vulnerability, and I'm finding that very rich. I hope you do as well. Mm-hmm. And now you have some good news for us.
Yes, as we have mentioned for a number of weeks, that this is our episode number 50. Dum-ba-da-dum. And on this fifth chapter, we have reached 50 episodes. We have had many comments, reviews, and notes from the Shire. And we would like to mark this occasion by honoring everyone who has piped up in our time together. So please keep leaving feedback wherever you listen and helping us improve week by week. Or as always, you can send us an email to asacredfellowship@gmail.com. But for now, it gives us great pleasure to say that we will be sending a sign emblazoned with the motto, speak, friend, and enter, to our recent contributor, Marnie Jones.
Yay, Marnie.
Thanks to all of you for keeping our spirits up and our thoughts flowing.
That is so cool.
Yay, I am so Marnie. Happy that we have gotten this far. I know I say a lot that I never really thought we would make it this far. And that is a moment of self-doubt, not a moment of I didn't think Lorianne would be able to hack it.
Oh, I'm hacking.
I think both of Earths are hacks at certain points, but we're not going to go any further in that theme. So I, with my stage fright and utter mortification at the thought of hearing my voice on any medium, didn't think I would keep up my spirits to stay with this as far as we have. So thank you all, and thank you especially, Lorianne, for bringing us to chapter 50.
And thank you for Catherine.
Or episode 50, sorry.
Episode 50, yes, episode 50. And thank you, Catherine, for having the idea and the deep knowledge to do this. And we're going to keep going, and we have a long way to go. But there is always already some discussion of what might we do after Sam says, well, I'm back. And so you have a note from the Shire.
Yes, I do. So we were, let me read the question or the observation that you made. It was about a Christian kind of cycle that it forms the letter CSJRR. Isn't do you remember fun? What that stands for?
Yes, I can tell. I can share that. So, and it's a cycle that you can find throughout the Bible, but you can find it through a lot of things where there will be creation, sin, judgment, repentance, redemption. And mm-hmm. you can use a lot of other different words for that, but I just love that the way I found to remember that was CS and JRR. So that is my little inkling mnemonic.
Well, this is from our good friend Eve, and she said, Catherine Darling, I would definitely need a community to do a spiritual reading of On Fairy Story, which is actually an explanation from J.R.R. Tolkien to his friend C.S. Lewis on the idea of creating stories and what he calls subcreation, but we will discuss that at length later. And dear Lorianne, the two stories I talk about are quite short and for me delightful. But since they are not concerned with Middle Earth, I would understand it for other readers who would do the Silmarillion first. My read of it, the Silmarillion, years ago was tinged with mourning, melancholy. Hear me, it's filled with wonders and beauty and valor, but sorrowful ending. Does man ever learn from her past? I hope that humanity shall ascend, advance in our interpersonal evolution, you know. So I definitely think that you and I should delve into the Silmarillion at some point, but we'll have to tackle that after we've gone through the long dark of Mordor.
Right. And I know that we will, and I've started reading and I've got some good notes to help me. So,
and I'm, of course, you've got your notes from Chad, who is just, Chad Bornholt is our encyclopedia of everything.
Oh, but when I'm done, his notes will be longer.
Oh, yes.
All right. Well, I think that brings us to the end of episode 50.
Yes, as always, thank you for spending this time with us. And for now, we shall say, may Elbereth protect you. Be of good hope. Namarie.
Namarie.